In a poll of librarians, teachers, publishers, and authors, the trade magazine Publishers Weekly asked for a list of the best children's books ever published in the United States. Hands down, the number one book was E.B. White's Charlotte's Web. Now a new book called The Story of Charlotte's Web explores how White's masterpiece came to be. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
One early fall morning in 1949, E.B. White walked into the barn of his farm in Maine and saw a spider web. That in itself was nothing new, but this web, with its elaborate loops and whorls that glistened with the morning dew, caught his attention. Weeks passed until one cold October evening when he noticed that the spider was spinning what turned out to be an egg sac. White never saw the spider again, and so when he had to return later that fall to New York City to his job as a regular contributor to the New Yorker magazine, White took out a razor blade and cut the silken egg sac out of the web. He put the sac in an empty candy box, punched some holes in it, and absent-mindedly put the box atop his bedroom bureau in New York. Weeks later, a movement on that bureau alerted him to the fact that tiny spiderlings were making a great escape through the air holes in the candy box. White was delighted at this affirmation of life and left the hundreds of barn spiderlings alone for the next week or so to spin webs from his hairbrush to his nail scissors to his mirror, until finally the cleaning lady complained. Thus was hatched the idea for Charlotte's Web, White's magical meditation on the passage of time, mortality, and the great gift of finding a true friend in this world. However, as Michael Sims tells us in his wonderful new book called The Story of Charlotte's Web, there was also a much longer incubation period for White's classic, a period that began with his isolated childhood as the youngest of seven children, the snappy creative bustle of the New York newspaper world in the 1920s, which gave White his career and his writing role models, and White's own lifelong struggle with anxiety. That anxiety was soothed in part by writing and by the company of animals. All except, that is, for rats. Take that, Templeton. If you love Charlotte's Web, and please, if you don't, just get help now. Sims' lively and detailed excursion into the mystery of how White's classic came to be is a perfect read for this season, full of grass and insects, pigs and summer rain. The first two-thirds or so of The Story of Charlotte's Web recounts White's life up to his 50s, when he began writing his masterpiece. Good as it is, the final section of Sims' book is the real revelation, not only about the influences on Charlotte's Web, but about just how hard it was for White to write, despite the fact that his style always seemed effortless. White was encouraged to attempt children's fiction by his wife, Catherine White, who was the fiction editor of The New Yorker and a regular reviewer of children's literature. She'd urged him to write his first children's book, Stuart Little, which was published in 1945 and had taken him over 6 years to write. White also took inspiration from the 1920s newspaper columnist, Don Marquis, who wrote acclaimed stories about a poetic typing cockroach named Archie. White was adamant that, like Archie, his fictional animal characters should not be cute, but should remain true to their predatory, and in the case of Wilbur, their manure-loving, messy nature. White finished the first draft of the novel in 1951, and then let it sit for a year. He said in a letter to his patient editor that, "I've recently finished another children's book, but have put it away to ripen. Let the body heat out of it. It doesn't satisfy me the way it is, and I think eventually I shall rewrite it pretty much." When Charlotte's Web finally came out in October of 1952, most of the reviews were laudatory, except for one, written by Anne Carroll Moore, the influential Children's Division librarian for the New York Public Library. Years earlier, Moore had panned Stuart Little, and now she slammed Charlotte's Web for leaving the human character of Fern undeveloped. White's own later understated estimation of his work is the most touching. In old age, when he was suffering from Alzheimer's, White liked to have his own essays and books read to him. Sometimes White would ask who wrote what he was listening to, and his chief reader, his son Joe, would tell him, "You did, Dad." Sims says that White would think about this odd fact for a moment and sometimes murmur, "Not bad."
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The Story of Charlotte's Web by Michael Sims. You can read an excerpt on our website, freshair.npr.org.